Please be seated. Our 11:30 case today is case number 55913. How do you pronounce it? Sasmos?
Somos, Your Honor.
Somos versus Venetian. Mr. Greenberg for the appellant, Ms. Anderson for the respondent.
May it please the court, I'm Leon Greenberg. I'm appearing today to argue on behalf of the appellant. I would request the court allow me to reserve 5 minutes of my time.
Certainly.
United States Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, over 100 years ago, in United States v. Brown, stated, "Whatever the consequences, we must accept the plain meaning of plain words." The district court, in refusing to accept the plain meaning of the word salesperson, has ignored this very wise admonition from Justice Holmes. The appellant was a commission-compensated food and beverage banquet server. He instituted this lawsuit to collect unpaid overtime wages pursuant to 608.018, that statute.
The 2005 version?
That is correct, Your Honor. The only period of time that is relevant to this litigation is prior to July of 2009. That statute, during the time relevant to this case, unlike the federal overtime law, only provided an overtime pay exemption for commission-compensated salespersons. It is undisputed that the appellant sold nothing. His work strictly concerned the serving of food and beverages. Selling nothing, he was not a salesperson. Even though it is apparent the salesperson is someone who sells, the district court held the word salesperson was ambiguous because Chapter 608 contained no explicit definition of the word salesperson. The district court and this court sit to enforce statutes as they are written by Nevada's legislature, pursuant to the meaning of the words of those statutes. The word salesperson has the plain meaning of referring to someone who sells. It is not an ambiguous word. The legislature's specific intent, or lack of specific intent, to grant an overtime pay right to the appellant is wholly irrelevant to the party's dispute. This court does not sit as a guardian over the wisdom or foolishness of the legislature. The legislature has the power to correct any failure by it to word a statute in a manner that complies with its intention.
So your argument is premised on the 2005 version of this statute's omission of the word service.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Essentially, I mean, that's what it's coming down to. You're saying he's not a retail salesperson, therefore that statute doesn't apply, and if it had had service in it, it would have led him?
The plain meaning of the statute, if worded as it is now, at that time, Mr. Somos would have been exempt, as he is exempt under the federal law, from the payment of overtime. The term salesperson in 608.018 by itself in the pre-2009 version was a limiting term. The statute did not say all persons paid commissions or all persons working in retail businesses paid commissions are exempt from overtime. It said all salespersons.
It said salesmen.
Salesmen. That is correct, but we would apply a gender-neutral reading.
Well, you're improving the statute's wording, too, then.
That's correct, Your Honor. This issue was brought to the attention of the legislature in 2009 by certain employers. The legislator at that time could have retroactively amended the law. They had the authority to do so. They had the power to do so. They chose not to do so. They did amend the law, and it had only prospective application. If they had amended the law retroactively at that time, they could have terminated this litigation. The fact that they failed to do so should not be overridden by this court. That was their choice. Respondent, though, having failed to secure an amendment to the statute that was retroactive, now claims that the statute was always interpreted to include this overtime exemption for the appellant because its language is substantially similar. The
argument, though, prior to 2005, it would not have applied to him, correct?
Your Honor, it would have applied to him if his wage rate was low. Prior to 2005, the only workers in Nevada who had any overtime rights under state law were those whose regular rate of pay was 1.5 times the minimum wage, which at that time was about $8 or $9 an hour, Your Honor. So prior to 2005, if this man had been paid, you know, $7 an hour, he still would have been paid entitled to overtime as a commission compensated.
And from 2009 forward, he's not entitled because banquet servers are exempted under the amendment that added service employees?
That is correct. He is a service worker, and he does work in a retail business. This is conceded.
And he works on commission?
He is paid substantially on commission, Your Honor. So he would clearly be exempt today based upon the 2009 amendment. But again, we are dealing with the period of time prior to 2009. And
walk me through the comparison of the 2005 version of 018 and compare it to the FLSA statute on which it was modeled and highlight for me the differences to which you want us to ascribe significance.
Well, Your Honor, the difference is in the plain language of the statute, and the difference is that today, the 2009 version of the statute reads identical to the federal requirement. Prior to 2009, the statute read, salespersons working in a retail business who are compensated at a commission rate more than 1.5 times the minimum wage. That was the group of employees, salespersons compensated by commissions. Not all employees, not service employees, but salespersons. There is a specific meaning to that term. It is a limiting term that the legislature may have not intended in 2005 to have an overtime right conferred upon the appellant is not the concern of this court. And for this court to now go, as the appellants have convinced the district court to do, and scrutinize the legislative intent or the lack of legislative intent, or but let's just say the legislative error in not paying attention to the language of the statute and actually making the language conform with its intent, it would open the door to the scrutiny of any statute that comes before this court for interpretation. This court works not as a guardian, not to sit over the wisdom of the legislature. The legislature makes policy here. Did the legislature fail to express in the statute in 2005 what they really wanted? Maybe they did. They could have fixed it. They could have fixed it retroactively. They didn't. This court is here to enforce the laws the legislator wrote it. Now, the fact that the respondents are inconvenienced by that, that this represents a significant and unanticipated change, an economic burden upon the respondents that they did not anticipate, well, they can go to the legislature and ask them to fix it still. That's not what this court's role is. From an institutional perspective, upholding what the district court did in this case would open the door to this court or the district court in any case having the prerogative to look at the intent or go beyond the plain ambiguous language of any statute to do what it interprets the legislature intended or didn't intend. And it goes, it threatens the very basis of how our judicial system functions, back to the words of Justice Holmes, which is that we must give, regardless of the consequences, meaning to plain words. And that's what we're asking the court here to do.
Could you also address the second prong of your argument, which is overtime is wages and there's a private right of action to recover them?
Well, Your Honor, fundamentally, the district court's analysis of that issue came from the Baldonado v. Wynn case of this court. And if you look at footnote 12 of Baldonado v. Wynn, the fundamental reason that in that case the claim under 608.160 concerning tips was found to be properly adjudicated solely by the labor commissioner is because there was no individual right there. The statute said the employer cannot take the tips, but it also said tip pooling is authorized. So in order to determine what is an appropriate tip pool, this court found it made sense, given the fact that there was no express legislative authorization for private cause of action, and it was not an individually conferred right, for have the labor commissioner use his specialized expertise to determine what would or would not be an appropriate tip pool. And it should also be observed that prohibiting an employer from taking tips is a conduct regulation. It is not a command that an employer compensate somebody at a certain level, because the tips, after all, don't come from the employer. In this case, you have a statute that requires the payment of overtime, much like requiring the payment of a minimum wage. So, and it is an individual right. The individual employee has a right to that overtime pay. There is no precedent for holding that a overtime pay statute would be enforced administratively. Every other jurisdiction, including jurisdictions similar to Nevada that have not expressly authorized private causes of action in their overtime pay statutes, have recognized them as making sense within the statutory scheme and framework. In addition, the enforcement of such a right is consistent with the federal law in this area as well, and the common law, which is that essentially this is a term of their contract of employment that the employer needs to pay this compensation, going back to such principles as quantum merit, for instance. I did ask to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Sampson? For the respondent, Venetian.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Lisa Anderson, and I'm here on behalf of the Venetian Casino Resort. When Mr. Greenberg got up, the very first thing that he said was that we needed to ascribe the plain meaning of the words of the statute. He really wants you to think that this is a very clear, plain, and unmistakable issue that you have to decide here today. But realistically, it's only plain, clear, and unmistakable if you ignore the proverbial elephant in the room along with his entire herd. And simply put, you first have to ignore the fact that for all time, this entire category of workers has been exempt under federal law. Banquet workers earning commissions have always traditionally been exempt under federal law and after the enactment of the Fair Labor Standards Act. You then have to completely ignore the fact that Nevada adopted its overtime statutes as a pattern after the Fair Labor Standards Act, and that, you know, in the cases that we've cited in our brief, that when Nevada enacts statutes that substantially track or are patterned after federal statutes, that they traditionally look to those federal statutes, those interpretations of those statutes, and the cases that define the interpretation and application of those statutes in determining what the scope of that statute would be.
Can you help me with a citation to what in the federal statute you believe 608.018 sub 3C as written in 2005, where was that taken from in the federal statute?
We believe that it was taken specifically from that commissioned employee exception to the Fair Labor Standards Act. The only substantial difference between the Nevada statute as written then and the Nevada statute and the federal statute would be that instead of the word salesperson, they used the word employee.
They also used retailer service, and we had only retail in ours, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The distinction there is that under federal law, employers such as the Venetian Casino Resort that provide restaurant or restaurant services have always been considered retail establishments as opposed to service establishments. And for the purposes of oral argument here today, the appellant in his brief has conceded the point that he's not alleging that this was not a service, that this was not a commission earned as a result of working for a service establishment, but rather that it was done for working in a retail establishment. So his sole argument here today revolves around, you know, whether the application of the term salesperson is ambiguous or not.
So you're saying he is not ascribing significance to the 2005 legislature's omission of retail, of service establishment, and reliance exclusively on retail?
That's what he's alleging in his briefs, Your Honor.
Okay.
You have to then ignore the fact that these same workers have been traditionally exempt from overtime both prior to 2005 and, you know, following 2009 up to the present. That the only thing that changed in 2005, as you know, set forth in the legislative history that we provided the court, was that the Nevada legislature wanted to more correctly tailor the Nevada statute to mirror that of the Fair Labor Standards Act. They weren't looking to expand the exemptions to overtime. They weren't looking to provide additional exemptions from overtime. They were simply looking to see that they more substantially tracked the ability to obtain overtime. Then you have to ignore the fact that during that entire four-year period, the person who's tasked with the enforcement of these labor statutes, the labor commissioner, he didn't reach out to the various hotel and casinos, one of the largest, if not the largest industry in the state of Nevada, that was supplying this law in this way for so many years, and say, look, going forward, these people are no longer exempt. You need to pay overtime. Instead, there were no enforcement actions whatsoever during that four-year period of time. You then have to ignore the fact that the 09 clarification of the statute, it demonstrates the legislature's intent when they initially enacted it. In 2009, when the statute was rediscussed and clarified, we provided you the legislative testimony at that time. The legislative testimony is quite clear. And first and foremost, we have the chairperson of the legislative committee saying that this is simply a clarification of the existing law to conform with the industry standard. That's an undisputed
point. But you have to
point.
Get to the – his point, as I understand it, is there's no ambiguity in the statute as written in 2005. And you have to get to ambiguity before you can get – justify resort to the extraneous sources you're relying on.
Absolutely.
So please make for us your argument on why that statute's ambiguous in a significant way.
Well, first and foremost, Your Honor, it's been our position in the briefs that the term salesman is inherently ambiguous because it's not defined in the statute, and that it is, in fact, capable of more than one reasonable definition. I think one of the
most... How would it reasonably be construed to apply to banquet servers?
Well, the fact that the appellant concedes that he was earning commissions more than reasonably suggests that he was acting in a sales capacity. In fact, in the Yee case that we provided to you in our briefs, the Yee case actually goes so far as to say the essence of a commission is that it bases compensation on sales. The fact that a commission is something that's traditionally associated with sales, it's reasonable to assume that a person who receives commissions is somehow involved in the process of sales. Another issue that we've raised in our briefs is if you look at the Novotnak decision, and that was a case where this court was looking at a statute regarding the entitlement to overtime. In that particular case, I believe the issue was that whether the person was involved in the direct sale of products, and this court found that the term products was ambiguous because it could be either products or the sale of products or sale of services. But the thing that was interesting about that statute was that it used the terms directly sells, something that we don't have here. Whereas, in this particular statute, the fact that the person is earning a commission, it suggests that he's involved and engaged in the act of sales. In fact, in his brief, he refers to a definition of salesperson and says that is a person whose job is selling or promoting commercial products. If you look back to the Novotnak decision, a product then would be a product or a service. So a salesperson again could be someone who is involved in the promotion of commercial services, such as the provision of banquet services and commerce and hospitality in the state of Nevada. I recently went on a vacation to Mexico, and as the court may be well aware, they're suffering a terrible recession based on the crime and violence that's going on in that country. And I was sitting and talking with one of the workers at the hotel, and I was telling him how wonderful and hospitable that everyone was. And he said to me, "We're all selling Mexico. We all have to sell Mexico." And to me, that's a good argument for the purposes of today, which is that sales don't necessarily mean that there's going to be a business transaction of handing money between parties. That it's something that there are many people involved in the sale of a good, the sale of a service, in the sale of an image, and particularly in our hospitality community. It's very fair, and it's certainly a reasonable interpretation that a salesperson is so engaged. But again, going back to the Meshmet case that we cited, I think that the court should really look at the language where they say that it would not be sensible to decide this case on the basis of dictionary meanings, or for that matter, commercial, common legal usages, because it's the fact that this industry all this time, both outside the state of Nevada and in the state of Nevada, have recognized that these workers are exempt and have been treating them as exempt, that in and of itself shows that there's an inherent ambiguity in this statute. The only other reasonable alternative for this court is to say that they, instead of them thinking that it's ambiguous and, you know, making a good faith effort to comply with the law, that they're basically thumbing their nose at something that's completely clear and unmistakable. And, you know, as set forth in the Yee case, the more plausible hypothesis is the fact that, you know, that there is a different and a more reasonable interpretation of the statute, and it is to comport with the industry standard. We've you know, briefed for you that once you get over the hurdle of the fact that there is another reasonable definition, and I guess it's important to point out as well that, you know, in the entire history of this statute, up to and including this four-year period of time after the 2005 amendments, the only person that has argued another reasonable definition of this statute, other than the one that's been used by the hotel and casinos and the workers themselves for all of these years, is Mr. Greenberg. He's the only person that's filed, you know, three lawsuits challenging the application and the interpretation and the definition of this statute as applied by the industry. The fact that he has a differing view is again clear evidence that there is an ambiguity with respect to the statute. Once there is an ambiguity, then you can go and look to the legislative intent. And then at that point in time, it does become clear and unmistakable, because as, you know, I set forth previously when I was talking about all the things that you have to put the blinders on in order to accept Mr. Greenberg's argument that this is clear and unmistakable, you see that he doesn't have any good argument as to what the legislative intent was, because we have the 2005 minutes from discussion regarding what the legislature intended to do, and, you know, they're clearly stating that what they want to do is to mirror and substantially track the exemptions under federal law. And yes.
Again, in the interest of time, I just wonder if you could comment on the private right of action and maybe the Baldonado and this Buenaventura case.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Frankly, you know, we had an opportunity to look at the supplemental authority that's been filed, and we've also taken a look at the more recent interpretation by Judge Hunt in the federal court. And although, you know, we do stand behind the arguments that we've submitted in our brief relating to the definition of wages and our belief that, you know, wages are more of a form of, if you will, a bonus or premium type pay as opposed to wages, you know, we're going to essentially concede that point, that you know, that we believe that those opinions are well reasoned, and that you know, that could be persuasive to this court for the purposes of you know, evaluating the merits of this particular case.
So you concede that if indeed this statute's ambiguous, or if indeed this statute is unambiguous and supports Mr. Greenberg's position, that a private right of action would lie.
We're not conceding that the statute is unambiguous.
Right, I understand that. But if he prevails on point one, you would
yes,
say
yes. But
we
believe that based on the practice and based on the, you know, the interpretations as set forth by the court and the various manners in which the process would work and the courts would interpret these provisions, that absolutely there would be a good argument that those would be wages and should be a private right of action. Turning back to the issue of the ambiguity and the legislative intent, again, we would just point out to you that, you know, we have provided the minutes. Those are undisputed. And particularly in 2009, we actually have testimony from the representatives of the workers themselves saying that this is the manner in which they interpret the statute, that this is, you know, that this is what their intent as well. And, you know, finally, the looking to industry practice is important for this court to do once you've determined that there is, in fact, an ambiguity. We have provided you the Moen case, which is another case where the court did go back and look at what the industry practice was. It's undisputed that, you know, even by Mr. Greenberg himself, that not only, you know, federally is this, you know, the standard, but also in each and every one of the states. Mr. Greenberg apparently took the time to look at each and every one of the state statutes and all of the other states to see whether any of those would allow for overtime for banquet workers. And he made a comment that he thought that there was a possibility, based on his interpretation of the Alaska statute, that they might possibly allow for overtime for banquet workers. And it's very clear that this is, that, you know, that this would have been an unforeseen and, you know, absolutely goes with, you know, be an absurd result and go beyond what the industry practice has been for many years. Again, you know, turning back to the issues that we set forth in Meshmet and Yee, the more plausible hypothesis and the one that the court should follow is that, you know, that everyone can't be wrong and Mr. Greenberg right. I mean, all of these, this industry has been doing the same thing for many years. The only other reasonable interpretation for this court would be that they understood the law, that it was clear and unmistakable, and that each and every one of them chose to completely and consciously disregard it during that four-year period of time.
Testing your definition of salesman, would everybody who works in a hotel, casino environment, who receives a commission, be a salesman?
If they are earning a commission, it certainly would mean that there was enough ambiguity in the statute to where we would have to look to the federal law and the federal decisions to see whether, in fact, they would and should be paid overtime.
May I ask?
Sure, absolutely. Go ahead.
So, everybody employed in the hotel casino industry in Nevada from 2005 to 2009, who happened to receive a commission, was also a salesman under this statute, as you read it?
It would be a reasonable reading of the term salesperson. That the court would then have to look beyond the ambiguity and look to see whether they were the type of employee who the federal overtime laws were intended to protect.
So really, salesperson would simply equate with employee.
It's the noun. I mean, you know, for our position, it basically is the noun in the sentence.
And so other service establishments, the veterinarians, you know, anyone who's providing a service and their employee works on partially paid by commission during this hiatus period would have been covered theoretically by the term salesman?
If they meet the other criterion, which would be, you know, the retail or the service establishment and such.
Right.
And, you know, that at a minimum, it would create enough of an ambiguity to where the court would have to examine and see whether they should be entitled to the exemption.
Anything further?
Thank
you. Patterson, thank you. Mr. Greenberg, rebuttal. You have 4 minutes and 53 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just very briefly on the private cause of action, in footnote 33 of Baldonado, this is addressed. And I would also submit that it would be very incongruous to say...
I think she's conceded the point.
Then I will not waste the time further on that. In respect to counsel's discussion of the term salesperson, the problem, as Your Honor has pointed out, is not only would that interpretation basically make every employee a salesperson, it would actually make people salespersons who are really devoid of any economic connection with what a sale is. The sale has already been made in the case of Mr. Somos. He is not responsible for making that sale. The legal obligation to pay for his services has been negotiated and secured by other parties. So to say that he is a salesperson involved in the transaction where he's providing the services completely removes the term sales from any meaning in the word salesperson, as I think Your Honor can appreciate. In respect to the Yee case, which counsel was relying on, it's very important the court understand the issue in that case was whether a form of compensation was a commission or was a piece rate. These were mechanics who worked in doing various auto repairs. And if it was a piece rate, these individuals would have been entitled to overtime. But if it was a commission, they would have fallen within the FLSA exemption. The fact that there was a look at what the industry practice was there is not analogous to any of the issues in this case. Appellant concedes these were commissions. There's no question that these were commissions.
And also you concede that we should not ascribe any significance to the omission of service from the federal statute when Nevada adopted this and just used retail? Is that a fair?
That is correct, Your Honor. I mean, the appellant clearly.
So your whole source of ambiguity depends on this salesman.
Well, it's not ambiguous, Your Honor. The limiting of the exception is to salespersons. The appellant met every other term of the exception, except he was not a salesperson. He sold nothing. The idea that the respondent is promulgating here that somehow the entire industry was willfully in violation of this requirement of the law ignores what I think is the most obvious explanation, simple ignorance, that the industry had not bothered to advise itself as to the requirements of the state law because they had not examined the impact of the 2005 amendments and they were used to dealing with the federal standard. And whether they understood it or didn't understand it has no bearing upon this court's decision. There is nothing absurd about applying the statute as written for the benefit of the appellant. The legislature has decreed that overtime shall be paid to most workers in the state, including workers, some who are paid $50 an hour or more. So the fact that the industry here perhaps has not made an allowance for that or is not used to that or is used to enjoying an exemption under federal law is irrelevant in respect to the issue before this court. And there is actually evidence in the record that the purpose of this statute, which overtime statutes, the purpose being to spread work among more workers by imposing a penalty upon employers, would have performed an important purpose during the period from 2005 to 2009, because we actually have excerpts in the record, it's at, I believe, pages 35 to 36 of appellant's appendix, where you have members of this industry who were actually protesting the actions of the Culinary Union in allowing employers to work these persons very long hours because it was depriving them of the opportunity to seek employment. So there's nothing absurd about having to pay overtime to these individuals, even if they were exempt under federal law. There was a legitimate state policy that could have been furthered by the statute. The fact that the legislature may have never intended it, it may have decided to change it, that goes completely beyond what this court is here to consider, which is, well, is there an ambiguity or is there an absurdity?
And your point is that this court doesn't sit to fix legislative errors.
That is correct. The industry is quite capable of getting the legislature to still take action for their benefit. They got them to take some action for their benefit, but they did not get a retroactive application of the statute, of the amendments in 2009, and the respondent concedes that. So this court has to work with the law as it was, not perhaps as the industry has believed it to be or as the legislature might have wished it to have been.
Is your opposing colleague correct that this statute, if read as you urge, would have put Nevada alone among any state, with the possible exception of Alaska, in treating banquet workers as entitled to overtime?
Who work
on commission?
My research indicates that is most likely correct. There are about 26, 28 states that have state overtime laws, with the exception of Alaska. My research has not indicated any state that does not model the Fair Labor Standards Act exemption completely, as best as I can tell.
So Nevada would have been unique for this four-year period?
With the exception of Alaska. That is, as best as I can tell, Your Honor, that would be the correct answer.
Any further questions, Justice Gibbons? Yep. Thank you, Ms. Greenberg. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Excellent arguments on both sides in this matter. This matter stands submitted. We're in recess till 1:30.